Good morning and welcome to Bat Chat. I'm Danny Gittings, sitting in for Hugh Chiverton. Your co-host this morning is Michael Cigani. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Danny.
Our main topic this morning: can the Umbrella Movement survive beyond tomorrow's expected clearance of the Admiralty protest site? Banners have appeared at the protest site announcing plans for a new Saturday movement, in which protesters wearing yellow ribbons will gather in legally in Central every weekend. And Benny Tai has suggested the next stage in what he described as Hong Kong's age of civil disobedience could be for angry citizens to refuse to pay their taxes and delay public housing rents. What do you think? Will tomorrow's clearance mark the end of the occupation movement, or will it simply re-emerge in another form? And would you consider refusing to pay your own taxes in protest at Beijing's rules on universal suffrage? Give us a call with your thoughts. Our number 233-88266. That's 233-88266. You can send us a text on 6395-5925 or email us at backchat@rthk.hk or go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio Free, and comment there. Joining us for our main part of our discussion this morning, we have David Webb, who is the founder of website.com. We have Avery Ng, the vice chairman of the League of Social Democrats. We have Fermi Wong, social worker and founder of the minority rights group Unison. And we hope to be we have Professor Michael Davis from the Faculty of Law of University of Hong Kong, and Ho Lok San from Lingnan University, Professor Ho Lok San, convener of the Silent Majority for Hong Kong. So a busy guest list here this morning. Avery, let's go to you first.
Good morning.
I presume tomorrow, when if the site is cleared as expected, that's not going to be the end of your protest actions, is it? What do you, as the League of Social Democrats, plan as the next stage?
Well, as we have always as we have been witnessing over the past 2 months, this is only the first stage of our civil disobedience and the fight for universal suffrage for 2017. Now, mind you that even tomorrow, if the police would want to clear, even by force, the students and ourselves will be there till the last minute. We are not going to resist arrest.
You won't resist arrest?
No, we won't resist arrest, because we do need to take responsibility for our action. So that doesn't matter.
When you say this is only the first stage in your civil disobedience campaign, what's the next stage? You must have been planning, thinking
about
it.
Well, let's look at just the timeline. Now, with the political reform, we still got at least 6 months to go before we can before we come down to the to the Legislative Council. Whether we can, within the next 6 months, make such maneuver that somehow the Communist Party will make concessions, we still don't know yet. So we will keep on fighting till the last minute. Now, in terms of the tactics and strategies, now, obviously, I've been talking about a de facto referendum forever. Now, whether Albert Ho would still can and willing to resign his seats to initiate a de facto referendum, at the moment, we still don't know. But apart from that, there's also a whole host of actions, such as, you know, refusing to pay tax, refusing to pay the public housing rent.
Would you consider that? I mean, I don't know if you live in public housing, but,
no, I know, but
you presumably do pay at least some tax.
Yeah,
you?
Yeah.
And the tax bills, we've all got our tax bills. The payment date's only a month or so away.
Yeah, and apart from the refusing to pay tax, there's a lot of other tactics. For example, since we want to exert pressure to the Hong Kong government and the Communist Party, then we can initiate some actions such as massive withdrawal from the Bank of China.
Okay.
Massive withdrawal from the Bank of China.
Or we just open up an account and deposit 50 cents in every single branch of the Bank of China. In that,
you're suggesting some sort of campaign against the Chinese, the mainland Chinese state-run banks in Hong Kong.
Yeah, because they are part of the Communist Party. Don't think that they are just a public listed companies.
But do you think that's going to actually work? Do you think that that will work, and enough Hong Kong people will be motivated to do that?
We don't know. It's the same questions like if you asked me 3 months ago whether the so-called umbrella movement, whether we can occupy the street for 2 months. 3 months ago, I would say no. That it's the nature of civil disobedience and Hong Kong's new wave of social actions.
Okay.
It is very organic.
Okay, let's bring in another of our guests, David Webb. David Webb, good morning to you.
Morning.
You've been a strong supporter of the Umbrella Movement. You spoke, didn't you, in Umbrella Plaza to the protesters.
Yep.
Now this phase is coming to an end. What do you think the next day should be? Should people refuse to pay their taxes? Would you refuse to pay your taxes?
No, I don't think the students pay a lot of tax as a whole.
They don't pay tax.
Plenty of supporters like you who do. I mean, you'd be rather more effective, presumably, if you refuse to pay your taxes than if students refuse to pay. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't think that would be a very effective way forward. I mean, you could pay your taxes in checks of $689 each, for example, and send them a large number of checks, and maybe that would be one method to gum up the works if there isn't some law against that. The Umbrella Movement is just emblematic of the democracy movement. I think that's the bigger issue here. It took on an unexpected form in an unexpected location. There will be more and more protests of that type, unplanned and unexpected and unpredictable, until the government, and I mean the mainland government, really, because ours is just a spokesperson for the mainland government, in this area, addresses the real issue, which is that people want to elect their own leader. They don't want independence, as Regina Ip has claimed. They simply want self-governance. They want to be like any state within the United States of America, to elect their own governor, but not to be independent of America. That would produce the social harmony that Beijing claims to want, and what they're doing at the moment certainly won't.
So what do you think they should be doing for the next phase to pursue this goal? You don't agree with refusing to pay
taxes? I think that they needed to refocus people on this issue. Obviously, the number of physical protesters in Admiralty has dwindled. I would have tried to call it off several weeks ago and said instead, let's give the chief executive a reasonable period of time without street protests until, say, the 1st of January, during which he should send a new report to Beijing on the actual situation in Hong Kong and ask the NPCSC for a new interpretation in the light of the change in that actual situation. If at that point he is seen to have done his best for the people of Hong Kong, and then Beijing still says, no, you need to have 50% majority in the nominating committee, then it's clearly on them, and he would have done his best. On the other hand, if he sits on his hands and says, oh, you just can't change anything, and I can only write one report in my lifetime, he would look extremely bad, and there would be a very large protest on the 1st of January, or whatever deadline one sets. So I think, you know, by regrouping, withdrawing, and setting a new deadline, you can galvanize public opinion for new protests with or without permits.
But tell us this, David. We've had over 2 months of Occupy. We've had tear gas. We've had confrontations between the police and the people. We have seen some amazing things that we've never seen in Hong Kong before. And that did not sway the central government. What do you think now can sway the central government? A large turnout on January the 1st?
Well, I think everyone has to be seen to try on that. I mean, eventually they will realize that street protests are not something they want to keep seeing. So that does seem to be the only language they really understand. It worked in 2003 with Article 23 legislation proposals, and it worked two or three years ago with the national curriculum proposals. There is an element.
But it didn't work with something even more drastic, like Occupy Central.
All they need to do is reset the nominating threshold to what it was in 2012. They've made it four times harder to get nominated, and that isn't gradual and orderly progress. It's going a giant leap backwards. And if they were to do that and bring the threshold back down to 1/8 or possibly something slightly higher, 1/5, I think most people would agree that that system would produce a free and fair election without having civic nomination, because pan-democratic candidates have stood in both of the previous elections, 2012 and 2007, having attained that 1/8 nomination.
Okay, let's
and Tsai Ing-wen himself only had 305 nominees out of 1,200 last time round. He didn't get a majority of the committee.
Yes. Okay, let's bring in another of our guests, Professor Ho Lok San from Ling Nan University. And Professor Ho is also convener of the Silent Majority for Hong Kong group. Professor Ho, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yes. Now, you've been hearing these ideas being suggested, Avery suggesting perhaps some sort of attack on the mainland Chinese banks in Hong Kong. As I said posters have gone.
Not a physical attack, nor a violent attack.
A financial.
By the way, that
financial attack.
David Webb, we'll come back to you on that in a moment. And as I mentioned earlier, some banners have gone up, I believe, in the Admiralty protest site, calling for a Saturday movement where people gather illegally wearing yellow ribbons in Central every weekend. How fearful are you about what may continue after the clearance, what we're going to see next in terms of civil disobedience in Hong Kong?
Well, first of all, I really hope that the occupiers understand that the question really hinges on how the common people, the public, view the actions, which is actually beyond the law, because if you contravene the law in some sense, but that doesn't cause too much inconvenience to the public, it may be okay, if you, for example, if you refuse to pay your taxes or something like that, you're not hurting other people as much. But if you're hurting other people, then it's altogether different, because actually it is undermining the very concept of democracy that they are promoting. And I think that's very, very much inconsistent, and they are actually undermining the public support for the cause.
So you don't actually mind this small-scale actions like people refusing to pay their tax or paying $689 or even the suggestion of sort of small-scale withdrawals and deposits in the Bank of China. You say that that's not going to cause inconvenience to others in the same way as street occupations. In fact, you probably say it's better than street occupations.
Well, I'm saying that if you do something that hurt other people, you have to put yourself in the shoes of others, and that is really what makes a law, the law, sensible. The law is there to protect everybody's rights, not just to protect some people's rights. So the concept of equal rights is really paramount. And fundamental to equal rights is the substantive equal rights.
Do you think there are large enough numbers of people organized enough, motivated enough to have a large-scale movement where people refuse to pay taxes in Hong Kong or withdraw their money from the Bank of China? Because the way I see it, the Bank of China clients, customers, are people who believe in the Bank of China anyway, so they're not going they're not going to withdraw their money.
If you never did, you wouldn't
put your money there.
No.
Yeah, and secondly, there's no visibility to such an action. I mean, if it's a private relationship between the bank and its customers, so if a bunch of customers withdraw,
I don't think that's going to work anyway.
What about a large-scale boycott of paying taxes? Will that work? Are people motivated enough for that?
Well, you see, my reading of the whole thing is that Beijing is really concerned about national security, even though the occupiers say that, we're not trying to achieve independence in any sense, but Beijing wants to make sure that whoever is elected is not going to really undermine Beijing's central interests, Beijing is concerned that if it is an election that may be influenced by foreign interests, you may have a puppet, that's actually catering to the interests of.
Do you really think that your fellow citizens are that stupid? Do you really think your fellow citizens are so stupid as to elect a puppet? You're insulting their intelligence.
I'm just talking about Beijing's concern. I'm just talking about Beijing's worries. Whether that worry is justified or not, it's not my concern. My concern is that Beijing is truly worried about a puppet chief executive who caters to foreign interests and undermines China's interests. And I think. Many times, actually, officials from Beijing said that the only criterion is that whoever is elected must not oppose Beijing's rule, and I think that that is really the main concern, you know. That is why I have been trying to suggest various ways to reduce Beijing's worries. I'm not saying that those worries are necessarily justified, but I'm saying that people in Hong Kong who want a more fair or low threshold nomination system have to try to work out ways, okay, to reduce Beijing's worries. And I also want to make a correction, you know, because there's too much misunderstanding about the so-called 50% threshold. You know, this 50% threshold, of course, I have been opposing all along. Okay, but okay. We must not mix that with. Yeah. We must not confuse that with the 50% nomination.
Okay, we'll return to the details of the nomination, which is a very important issue. Mm-hmm. We'll try and return to the details of the nomination process later on in another discussion. And what we're actually specifically focusing on this morning is basically what's going to happen after tomorrow's clearance of the Admiralty protest site. What form will the protest movement take after this? All kinds of ideas, such as refusing to pay your taxes, being bandied around. If you have ideas about what you think is likely to happen, do email us at backchat@rthk.hk, or you can go to our Facebook page and comment there. Henry commenting on the idea of refusing or delaying to pay your taxes. Henry says, I think ideas like delaying tax payment would not work because the taxpayer involved would have to pay the penalty. The same applies to some of these other ideas. Such wildcat non-cooperation gimmicks will not help them in achieving their goal, and with time passes, such actions will die down since they would backfire. They would only increase the disgust people have for these opposition forces. After the clearance of the protest sites, I expect the police will start arresting people involved, like the leaders of the Hong Kong Federation of Students, Scholarism, and the LegCo members have been involved. I believe when CY Leung mentioned that he and Beijing have confidence that the 2017 Universal Suffrage Bill would be passed, they're sending some signal they can see how the big picture will develop in future. And on our Facebook page, Yao saying that these are the wrong questions to be asking. The true questions are, what do Hong Kongers want, and how much would Hong Kongers be prepared to give for their freedom?
Well, maybe we should ask Fermi Wong that. She's sitting there. What do Hong Kong people want?
And we should add Fermi Wong. Fermi Wong's social worker and founder of minority rights group Unison. You were one of the people who turned yourself into the police last week together with Benny Tai.
Yes, I was one of the people who, you know, take our own initiative to surrender ourselves to the police. Of course, you know, the whole campaign is about, you know, for Hong Kong, we want genuine democracy. That is, you know, universal suffrage, that, you know, no screening. So, of course, you know, you've asked me that whether the campaign can really achieve that. Of course, no, right? You know, but I think the government can, of course, you know, clear the occupation zones physically. But as you know, we said that, you know, for the next stage, we want to occupy people's hearts.
So how do you do that?
I think Hong Kong people are very creative. Like, you know, of course, you know, we can, you know, think about all those, you know, uncooperative campaign, like, you know, boycott of the China enterprises, business, mm-hmm. you know, refuse to paying tax, or, you know, continue the Kao Wu campaign, the shopping, you know. Really, you know, to exhaust police, you know, power is
but
also
that's
a good
for
way.
Me, that's hurting small business people. If you continue this campaign of shopping in Mong Kok, that's not hurting the big guys, it's hurting the little guys.
No, actually, there's no small business. Guys, yeah, those are big guys on the street.
No, if you go to Nathan Road, I think you will see all the jewelry shops, you know, rather than the, you know, small businesses. And also, of course, you know, I think the community education, that, you know, the importance of democracy. Of course, I was surprised that, you know, suppose they pull Democratic, you know, they have been doing that, you know, the community work, but it seems not. Not really. Like, you know, many people still asking me that, you know, why, you know, the government already, you know, suggests one person, one vote, and then you are still not happy with it, like one Park Sunny.
You look at things like this, the shopping campaign in Mong Kok. I mean, it got headlines, but what has it actually achieved? It's only been a couple of weeks since the clearance of Mong Kok, and it's already dying down. You look at the numbers every night, it's much less than was before.
And you know, you say it hurts. You go to Nathan Road or Mong Kok, you see all the big jewelry companies and so on. Yeah, that's true. But when you stop them from doing business, you're stopping the rich guys from making money, but you're also stopping the little guys who are working for the rich guys from getting their salaries.
But of course, I think that is one of the tactic and campaign is not the only one. Of course, and we said that, for the long-term civil society development should be, we bring with so-called, democracy, go back to the community, that, the whole or, majority of the Hong Kong people, that they appreciate the importance of democracy and also the universal suffrage. And also I will suggest that, in Hong Kong, maybe Hong Kong is not a really democratic city, that, it's really lack of, we call political lobbying business, right? Maybe we should form, a political lobbying team that at least to lobby the government or even the China official. But you don't really see it's, happening. And also, I would also suggest maybe we have a campaign calling to the, top officials to resign or step down.
Well, Michael Davis, you've been sitting there, Professor Faculty of Law, University of Hong Kong. We were talking about the shopping campaigns and so on. Michael de Gaulle has been saying quite a few times that the best way is to target the people who will be hurt in such a way that they will sit up, and that is because we have an unfair society. So you do target the tycoons, you do target the top end of the people who has made this society an unfair society. Do you think that can work?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what you have to do. You have to identify targets, people who are involved, for example, in robustly promoting the NPC decision and so on. Many of these are corporate elites. They could be identified. I think what's important here is that people step back. They can go online, by the way, in Google, 198 methods of nonviolent action, and they'll get what Gene Sharp has put forward as nonviolent action in regard to a number of things like nonviolent protest and persuasion, non-cooperation in social, economic, and political areas, and nonviolent intervention. So these kinds of categories, I mean, we can study various things. But it seems to me that what's really involved here, it's not so much that we're trying to scare Beijing into doing things, because we probably can't, but what is really going on is a battle for the hearts and minds of Hong Kong people. So the occupation is losing ground in that respect, and Mr. Webb's comment that maybe a month ago withdrawing would have been a good idea when popular support was higher. And then you can engage in all of these actions, 198 of them listed here, that you can look at that involve putting pressure on people that are promoting the opposite thing that you're trying to promote, which they're trying to defeat democracy, so that these could be companies that try to win favor with Beijing by supporting it and so on. And it can also be things about teaching and reaching out to the public, because if the real game is winning the hearts and minds of Hong Kong people, then I think you have to look at how and who you reach. It can involve education issues, young people. The future is the young, and the protesters are young.
But how does that differ from what people have already been doing? I mean, pro-democracy forces have been reaching out to the community and hearts and minds for a long time.
Not much.
Well,
I think the young are already on the right side. I mean, the vast majority of them.
Professor Michael Davis, then we'll go back to Fermi Wong.
Yeah, there's a whole range of strategies beyond just, saying that we're going to reach out to the hearts and minds of people. Things like education, teaching, even students in the arts could be involved. What's needed is to win people's support. Then the government has to deal with a populace that is pro-democracy and really doesn't like what the government's doing. Then when politicians want to act, they'll have the support they need. When elections are held, they'll have the support
they
need.
Okay. Fermi
says not enough has been done to reach out to people.
No, if you look in the recent years that the pro-democratic parties, that, I think a lot of, political disputes, arguing.
Well, is sitting right here.
I do agree with her.
Yeah, but because it's not really, in Hong Kong now, it seems that there are two parallel worlds. Like, for those youngsters who occupy the, in the movement, it seems that they are fully aware of the importance of democracy. But more out there, who never, you know, visit the occupation zones, that, you know, they have no idea, a lack of passion about the democracy. So I would say that, you know, for the majority of the youth, they still not really, you know, are fully aware, you know, the importance of not only democracy, the human rights, equality, those core values. So I think a lot of, you know, community education, reaching out to the school, church, or the community, I think still a long way to go.
Okay, Professor Holoxan, I know you have to leave in a few minutes. Yeah. What is your feeling on what Fermi Wang just described? Do you think that would really make a difference from the pro-democracy camp?
Yes, I think if you want to win the hearts of people, you have to re-adhere to the democratic spirit, which is really respecting other people's equal rights. You know, you have got to do that first, and then you can start winning support. But if you actually trample on other people's rights and say that we are for equal rights, you know, you are being inconsistent and you cannot win people's support.
So you're actually happy with the way things are going. You're prepared to put up with sort of small-scale civil disobedience as long as the, what you might call the large-scale civil disobedience ends. Would that be a fair summary?
What I'm trying to say is that you have to minimize the, any inconvenience or losses that are imposed arbitrarily on people, you know, and you have to make that very clear, you know. You have to make it very clear that you understand.
So, Mr. Ho, you did say that you were opposed to the 50% threshold.
Okay,
what would you do?
David, we'll leave that we'll return to that after the news because we
I
are...
I think you said he has to leave, so I was just wondering. What would you do to get that threshold down?
Professor Ho, 15 seconds on the 50% threshold, if you can.
Yeah, that threshold is just a way of allowing people to oppose certain... candidates, you know, who potentially are considered to be sort of enemies of Beijing's rule.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We will have to break for the news there. Thank you very much, Professor Holoxan. We will be continuing this discussion in 3 minutes. Please do email us, backchat@rthk.hk, and give us your comments, and we'll be reading the emails out after the news. The weather forecast, cloudy with a few rain patches. The temperature, 19 degrees. Back in 3 minutes. Welcome back to Backchat. I'm Danny Gittings, sitting in for Hugh Chiverton, your co-host this morning, Mike Chigani. We're discussing what else? The umbrella movement in the light of the impending clearance of the Admiralty protest site. Can the umbrella movement survive beyond that clearance, and what form will it take? Our guests, Avery Ng from the League of Social Democrats, Fermi Wang, social worker and founder of Unison, the minority rights group, Professor Michael Davis from the Faculty of Law, University of Hong Kong, and David Webb from website.com. Let's go to a few comments from our listeners. Several emails coming in. You're welcome to email us at backchat@rthk.hk and give us your thoughts. Gladys emailing in saying it is irresponsible for police and others to tell people to stay away from areas without telling those of us whose workplaces are in Admiralty, which also applies to me, and need to go to or near those areas, whether we are supposed to stay away from work on the day. Should I advise my staff to stay away or wear hard hats and masks? Will that increase the risk of them being arrested? Okay. And a couple of other emails coming in. Umes saying, greetings from freezing Beijing. I agree with the umbrella idiots for a change. Go on. Don't pay your rents, your taxes. It will just get them in more hot water than they're already in. Just leave the people who don't want to be involved in this alone. This is their fight with the Hong Kong government and Beijing. Go fight them and leave the people alone. And as for the idea of opening bank accounts with small amounts, I don't think you can open an account with 50 cents.
Well, it's nice to hear that they can hear us in Beijing. I mean, he must have got underneath the firewall.
Hang on, David Webb, but we've got one for you as well. First of all, Jeffrey, possibly sarcastically, saying, flash mob the borders. I call it flash protest. It will effectively shut down the borders. And Rick addressing David Webb, will democracy give us clean air, affordable housing, better or more affordable education, perhaps even improved health care? No, it will not.
Wow. Yes, it might.
Let our listener finish the comments first, David Webb, then we'll come to you. Getting rid of the tycoons would be a start. Hong Kong is recognised as a free economy, but the stock market is rigged and the property market is rigged. However, I don't agree with the street muppets and their party. The fact they're sleeping in tents is an irony less lost on most observers. David Webb?
Hey, hang on, David Webb. Before you go on, I want to ask that listener, how, as David Webb pointed out, how is he able to hear us in Beijing?
Well, we are on, well, of course, we do say the RTHK website is difficult to access in Beijing.
It's impossible. I can't access it when I'm across the border.
You must be in the office using a VPN.
How did he do it? I really want to know, because I can't access it.
It takes some effort, basically. Okay. So he's obviously a keen listener.
We're very happy to welcome our keen listeners from Beijing. Umesh,
the Beijing person, please let us know how you access it.
If you think you can tell us without having your method shut down, please do email us back and let us know how you're listening in Beijing. In the meantime, David Webb.
Sorry, what was the question?
It's just so absurd. Clean air.
Yes. Well, look, the point is that if you have democracy, you can choose between governments which have different ideas about how to resolve these issues, different policy platforms in their manifestos. At least you might not have a chief executive who panders to an election committee stuffed with vested interests who oppose various measures like cleaning up the air, taxing diesel, for example. There's no tax on diesel. Why? Because the transport lobby has so many votes in the election committee and one in LegCo.
Well, then you can transport constituents who have a lot of votes in universal suffrage as well. You're pandering to all these, everybody who works in the transport sector?
I think they're probably a minority of the population. Not everybody's driving a diesel truck. Mm. People would see the greater good in using a bit more stick as well as the carrot. As CY Loan pointed out the other day, they're throwing $10 billion, and that's a lot of money, as he put it, getting people to convert, or rather to replace their vehicles slightly earlier than they would have done, because they've got years in which they can take this money. That's a very long-term and expensive solution to a fairly pressing problem. I think if you abolished all the corporate voting and we had universal suffrage after a reasonable nomination threshold, then those vested interests would lose their heavy influence, and we'd get policies that favour the market and the people rather than just particular businesses.
Okay, Danny keeps on pointing out, we were talking today about what happens after tomorrow. You've come up with some ideas about tax boycotts and so on. Do you think you can keep the momentum up? Because the momentum, as has been pointed out, numbers are camping out, have dwindled, as Danny said. The shopping things, numbers have dwindled. How do you keep this momentum? How do you keep the light, the flame burning, so that people will say, all right, we've done what we have done. What's the next step? How do you then actually generate as much interest as you have done with Occupy?
Well, actually, I have to go back to the point whereby everybody kept saying, well, we have to win the hearts and minds of Hong Kong people. And it just sounded like we don't have the hearts and mind of Hong Kong people. The fact is, with these occupation of civil disobedience, it has always been a minority action. Now, minority, but I'm saying at least around 30%. Mm. But if you look at, apart from the occupation action itself, for those people who really want true universal suffrage, it is a majority.
Yeah.
So we've already got part of their hearts.
Lost quite a few hearts over the past few weeks, haven't you?
No.
I don't think that's true.
I don't think so.
The latest opinion poll from CUHK, which was in mid-November, although the majority of respondents said they wanted the protests to end, a majority of respondents also said that LegCo should veto the NPC's proposals, which is saying something, because it's saying these proposals are so bad, they are so little, that it's better to reject them and hold out for something greater and better.
So they may not agree with the tactics, but they agree with the goal. So it is a matter of how we can keep the momentum.
Exactly.
And
so I'm asking
the
you, what new
months.
Tactics can you use?
I kept saying defer to referendum, but then that's Albert Ho's question.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea, because I think the government's going to do its very best to twist 4 out of 27 legislators to go onto its side, or to abstain at least, and not to veto the proposal. If you have one or two of the 27 running, and these are the most strongest believers probably, resigning their seats and running for election, then it might be harder to stop that proposal being passed.
That's one of the risks that we have to
Michael Davis, if there was
and the pro-Beijing side will just boycott the whole process like they did last time. There'll be a very low turnout, and they'll say, well, it's just the same people voting for their pan-democratic candidate.
So, Michael Davis, if there was, I again go back to what Michael DeGaulle said, that because of what happened with Occupy, the 2016 Legislative Council elections, the Democrats could lose. Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't think so. I think what's been pointed out just now, that the support for democracy is high. In fact, I think the government has so mishandled all of this and has not been seen to represent Hong Kong. I think that a lot of people are really disgusted with the government. They may be upset with the Occupy movement, but I think they also recognize, and it's widely recognized, that Hong Kong's autonomy is at stake. The rule of law is at stake. If we have a government that is kowtowing to Beijing all the time and not representing Hong Kong interests. So I think even if the Democrats aren't idiotic in how they handle the election, they should be able to sustain their support. They may even be able to increase it. And I think this is important. So one possible danger, of course, is that some legislators either will resign or be arrested or unavailable to vote, and the government could ram through its legislation. Actually, for the Democrats, either way, to block it, or even if it got rammed through over their heads in some nefarious way, then they could block the election itself that were held. They could boycott it, they could file ballots in different ways. So nonviolent struggle involves a
but
lot
ramming
of
through something
a lot and of them available.
Ramming through the package in the way you describe, even though it passes in LegCo, it will still lack the legitimacy that it needs for the future government to govern, right? So ramming it through that way doesn't really work.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is the Democrats have multiple avenues over this, you know, voting on the bill and so on, or even if somehow they lose and the bill is passed, they're actually almost in a stronger position, because then they can get their supporters to boycott whatever election is held in various ways. So there's just a lot of strategies. It's nonviolent strategies. They barely touch the surface. And I think what's going on over the long haul, as we keep repeating, is winning people's public support. And the Democratic camp can use this to its advantage. Maybe the Occupy movement has caused some damage to them, but I think over the long haul, the public support for democracy, i.e. public opposition to Hong Kong losing its autonomy, is very strong.
Now,
and
so
this is something they have to
And
to,
it's
to
only
going to
keep growing.
Yes, yeah. Fermi Wong.
Yeah, because, you know, like for the Occupy Central with Love and Peace will be end, you know, formally after tomorrow. And that, you know, for the trio, they are proposing, we call it a social charter, that, you know, we list out all those Hong Kong core value, autonomy, equality, democracy, freedom, liberty, all those, you know, values. That I think we are targeting the next year's, you know, district council election. That maybe it would be a good movement that, you know, we have a whole district level to talk about the Hong Kong value. I think this is also one of the idea, you know, to maintain the momentum. And also another...
when you talk about the district council, is it time for the old... We've seen a new generation of protesters arising in these protests. Is it time for the old generation of politicians in, I have to say, things like the Democratic Party to move over for Joshua Wong?
I certainly think so. And also we are suggesting, you know, the youngsters, especially the students, the leaders, whether they can form a young political party or platform
to
participate. No, maybe not really a party, but at least, you know.
You've got so many.
But at least, you know, they take part in the elections. That, you know, it's also
we
kind
need
of
new faces.
Yes, for sure.
Are you part of the old generation or the new generation?
Well, apparently I'm in between. I'm considered old by the student standard.
Do you think people like Joshua Wong and Lester Sharm and so on should stand for election to district council?
I think they do face their, you know, it is their personal choices, but we do need to have a serious reshuffling and consolidation, if ever possible, amongst the pandemic.
So the people like Emily Lau and Albert Ho and these guys, they should go, right? They've been around for too long.
Yes, I've been saying that for years.
So why aren't they going?
Maybe it's because they're popular.
Well, I think it's the fact that the younger generation or the younger politicians over the past few years or a decade, they have not got the chance or got the opportunity or the platform to emerge through the social movement. But we can see that has changed over the past 3-4 years. I mean, now we are talking about an 18-year-old kid potentially running for legislators rather than having a 50-year-old guy. So that will change. And I can see that over the next 5 or 10 years, a whole new wave of young politicians will come, will emerge through. And that's what the government and the Chinese Communist Party need to face. The new generations is...
Oh, it's a continuous replenishment.
Yeah. But I don't think you need more parties for that. You need to replenish the parties.
Yes.
You know, and the government's and Beijing's strategy all along has been to divide and conquer the opposition by designing an election system which encourages just that, short one-person party lists and, you know, potentially winning a seat with only about 8% of the vote in a very large multi-seat constituency. They are actually talking about increasing the number of super constituencies. In other words, reducing the number of seats per constituency, which would start to reverse that process, because I think they've realised that it's gone too far and they've ended up with outliers in the legislature. It's difficult to see how, in that environment, the various factions and shades of the spectrum are going to come together and form perhaps one or two opposition parties rather than the numerous ones that we currently have.
Okay, let's bring in some more comments from our listeners and we'll go back to another round of comments from our guests. Bowen, one of our most regular correspondents, saying blanket statements about Beijing's concern about national security and about not having someone opposing Beijing's rule as chief executive are misleading. If there are concerns about national security, you need to ask how such concerns are justified, what evidence is there for such concerns. If you talk about not having someone opposing Beijing's rule as chief executive, you need to demarcate what areas are rightfully the realm of governance for a chief executive of Hong Kong and what areas are exclusively the domain of Beijing, and stick to those distinctions. It will also be necessary to put in place a mechanism, such as one operated by an independent judiciary, to decide which side of the fence an issue is where you have a dispute. And James saying...
Well, we do have all that in the basic law.
Okay, let's get to the remaining comments from our listeners and David Webb can come back. The arguments have been debated ad nausea. What is so frustrating is the reluctance of all sides in the debacle to give a little to avoid the imminent tipping point from which Hong Kong will struggle to recover. Is it a fear of losing face? Is it a lack of communication skills? Or is it just plain bloody mindedness? Surely CY should be savvy enough to realise that he needs to address the students with understanding and compassion. Surely Beijing must realise that its standing international community would soar if it took a conciliatory stance. Surely the student movement and its cheerleaders realise that their antics are counterproductive. Cannot the motley bunch of actors realise that to admit one's fallibility is a strength, not a weakness? Maybe you should do all of us a favour by banging a few of your guests' heads together to bring them to their senses. Okay. And finally, Umesh, who impressed us from listening in from Beijing and was speculating about how he was able to do that. He says, yes, indeed, he is using a VPN, which is a way of avoiding...
Well, there
the
you go.
He says, I just won't tell you which one. Okay, more seriously, on that last point from our listener, saying that we should bang all your heads together, that I mean, there are a lot of ordinary people in Hong Kong out there who feel like that, don't they?
Yeah. I think throughout this umbrella movement, one key thing is the youth finally is not just awakened, but also empowered.
Yeah.
From just being watching politicians or watching these social movements from their TV screens, they now know that participation is not that bad. They may not know that they are going to change things immediately, but they know that if they don't come out and be part of the movement, that change is not going to happen. So with that mindset, pretty much embedded in the new generation, the social movement, the pressure, the fight for democracies is going to grow stronger and stronger over the next decade. Now, so the ball is actually on the Communist Party's court. If they fail to recognize this phenomenon and keep on having this strong-handed approach, the society is going to keep dividing. And then the people are going to get angrier and angrier, which is what we do not want to see.
But if it's a long-term fight, as you say, and many others have said, it's a long-term fight. So why then is it that you're fighting for the 2017 chief executive election framework. If you know it's a long-term fight, that's not going to happen.
No. Well, we are fighting.
Why fight for that?
Why not accept
that and then continue the fight?
We might think that this is a long-term war, but we want to fight every battle as if it is our last. Because otherwise, we can never win the war.
It's true. And of course, it requires this lifelong commitment. But of course, we want to have the democracy as soon as possible. So we see it as the last fight, and then we try our best. Yeah.
Professor Michael Davis, your colleague Benny Tai said in his article for New York Times last week, a more serious crisis will break out in the future if the source of the problem is not dealt with. The next outbreak will be fiercer. Do you think that there's a real danger of that?
I think there's a danger of that. I think the first listener, the comment that you had a moment ago was right on target. The more Beijing interferes, the more opposition it gets.
Yeah.
So ostensibly, it's done all of this stuff over the summer to stop having a CE that would defend Hong Kong's autonomy. And in fact, what it's created as a result of its intervention is an entire civil society that's opposing Beijing's interventions. So this excessive intervention is a lesson that they need to learn on that side, that if they step back, then there's less reason for people to be opposing them because they're not going to be the target of policy decisions. So I think this is critical. And if Beijing's answer to all of what we've seen over the last few months is more and more control and intervention, then Benny Tai is right on target. We're going to have
But
more
what
more
is going to be fiercer? How much fiercer can it get than what we've already seen?
Well, I think if what...
You're not talking about a revolution or anything like that, are you?
No. What I fear is that a society, frankly, as long as people are participating, that shows they have hope. When they stop participating, that may actually be worse. That's when they're going to be immigrating, and they're going to be imagining that Hong Kong no longer exists as they know it, that it's simply another mainland city. And when that happens, I think the population, some people, of course, may become more radical, but a lot of people will leave. And I think this would be a tragedy.
Yeah, they
Hong
vote
Kong.
With their feet.
Yes. Do you think that's a real danger, David Webb?
I do, yeah. Let's not forget that the more educated and higher income people are, the more they tend to have foreign passports. 50,000 families in the middle classes, not just the breadwinner, but the whole family, were given passports before the handover by the British, and there are probably even more Canadians and Australians in Hong Kong, which is why, of course, you can't prohibit votes for permanent residents who have foreign passports, even people like me. And you know that they are the mobile part of our population. They are they're also the sort of core of our services industry. So, if you irritate people enough or disillusion them enough, they will start looking for alternatives.
Is that going to sink Hong Kong?
There was mass migration
leading up to the handover.
It was a very real concern. After Tiananmen Square.
Right. But it didn't sink Hong Kong. Hong Kong recovered.
We did, because until now, there's been a relatively hands-off approach from Beijing, although there's been an increasing amount of frustration about the continued lack of progress on democracy. But, it's a very fine balance, and I think that it's an unstable balance as well. There's no place on earth that seeks to combine all of our civic freedoms with the lack of democracy. So it can either go one way or the other. We can either get democracy and be an open society, or Beijing can crack down, introduce Article 23 legislation, introduce severe jail terms for even proposing in a newspaper that there be a protest, and turning us into a situation that looks a lot more like Singapore than an open society.
Okay, a very interesting discussion this morning, and this discussion certainly will continue. my thanks to all our guests in discussion this morning. David Webb from website.com, Avery Ng from the League of Social Democrats, Fermi Wong, social worker and founder of minority rights group Unison, and Professor Michael Davis from the Faculty of Law, University of Hong Kong. And of course, earlier we were also joined by Professor Ho Lok San, who's the convener of the Silent Majority for Hong Kong. I'll give the last word to our listeners. A couple more emails coming in. Yolanda says, I, as one member in the Society of Hong Kong, I welcome and to allow different voices, different opinions, but it must be in a lawful way. To occupy the streets as a negotiation instrument of the Hong Kong government will not get the support from the majority of the Hong Kong people. It affects the livelihood of the people in the affected areas. It brings a huge negative impact to the image of Hong Kong being an international financial centre. It does more harm than anything as of today. Do you know how much time we waste every day on transport? Wasting people's valuable time equals wasting people's lives. Some people complained of the police's excessive force. Why didn't they complain about the action taken by the violent protesters who did non-peaceful things such as clash the police lines and broke glass in the LegCo buildings? Okay, and finally, we go to Jason, a supporter of David Webb. Jason says, I agree with David Webb. Democracy is much more likely to give us clean air, better education and better healthcare. I'm a doctor. There's no serious political discussion about healthcare in our society, and going on to talk about things like lack of colon cancer screening programs and so on. Also, interestingly, Jason is listening from the Kowloon Canton Express, listening on the RTHK app on my phone using a 3G link provided by China Mobile. And indeed, he starts his email saying, greetings from China. So that's two.
Canton Express?
Well, the cross-border railway, right? Yes, it's perhaps an old name to refer to it. We obviously do have a significant number of listeners in China, and we welcome feedback from listeners, whether you're in Hong Kong or you're outside Hong Kong. Do please keep those emails coming. Okay, thank you again to our guest.